Good morning. It is 9:03 a.m. We are here today, November 24, 2015, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatnya, Guam, for the pre-hearing of OPA PA 15009, Corondo Corporation versus Department of Public Works. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Yuka Hechinova and Michelle Brillante. Will appellant Corondo Corporation please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Well, good morning, Madam Auditor and Mr. Camacho. Present with me today, to my right, is Sarah Fitzpatrick, soon-to-be lawyer, law student. Mr. Han, representative of Corondo. Behind me is Mr. Kim, another representative of Corondo. Thank you.
And identify yourself.
I forgot to do that. Yes, Joyce Tang on behalf of Corondo. Thank you.
What is Mr. Kim's name?
Byung,
or first name?
Mr. Byung Kim.
Yeah.
B-Y-O-N-G?
Yes. B-Y-O-N-H-O. Is the
okay,
name.
There's a middle name, H-O. Byung Ho.
We don't have a middle name.
Okay, oh. Byung Ho Kim. All right, and then your first name is?
K-I-W-O-K.
K-I-W...
Double O-K.
K-I-W-O-K.
Double O-K.
All right. You were Han?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Han. And then please proceed.
Will Purchasing Agency Department of Public Works please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, Tom Keeler, Assistant Attorney General, the Director of Department of Public Works, was not able to attend this morning.
Thank you.
Well, we're here for the, today's the motion hearing day, pursuant to the previous scheduled order after the status hearing and the pre-hearing conference. We're going to proceed with the motion hearing, and then afterwards we will then proceed with the pre-hearing conference. So I believe that quite a few things were filed. So there was, we'll start with the, well, first of all, I do understand that Ms. Tang, you filed a few things.
One is yesterday?
Your motions?
I'd be happy to brief it. We filed four motions to date. They're pending. Corondo's motion for summary judgment.
Well, we'll get into the motions in a minute. So you filed four motions. Mr. Keeler, did you file any motions at all?
Yes, we filed two motions.
We filed two motions. So we will start with the appellant's motions, and then we will go into the government's, the purchasing agency's motions. And I believe your first motion was a motion for summary judgment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So we'll,
may I?
Yes, we can argue that motion. And the order, just so you know, Mr. Keeler, is I'll allow Ms. Tang to argue briefly. If you have anything to say in opposition, you'll have that opportunity. And then Ms. Tang will have the opportunity to reply or submit any rebuttal arguments. And the same goes for your motions. You'll argue then. She can state anything in opposition, then you may rebut after she says she'll get the last word. As this is your motion for summary judgment, Ms. Tang, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. Corondo's motion for summary judgment focuses on a very narrow issue. The issue is whether Stanley Consultants, Inc., which was the construction manager on the Billy Bay and Piqua Bay bridges replacement projects, had altered the submittal logs. So that's the narrow issue. We submit the facts are undisputed. Now, the summary judgment standard, as I've seen from previous filings and decisions of this the OPA and the hearing officers, relies on Rule 56, where there are no material, general material facts in dispute, The OPA and the hearing officer might, may grant summary judgment on a particular issue. I would also add, and this is going to be relevant so that we don't have to go through the standards every time, is that with respect to summary judgment, that the summary judgment, the rule in summary judgment requires, follows Rule 56, right? And it requires that supporting and opposing affidavits shall be made on personal knowledge, shall set forth facts as would be admissible in evidence. The evidence, the test for what can be relied upon for purposes of granting summary judgment should be evidence that is admissible. And this is going to be relevant in discussions, I think, arguments on other motions in this case. But I just want to bring it up front so that we don't have to repeat the standards over and over. And I think that's relevant because evidence that is admissible cannot be hearsay. It has to be from personal knowledge and not someone's opinion generally about some process. It needs to be someone who has personal knowledge about the events or the acts in question. All right? Okay, those are the standards. With respect to, and I cite to just Walenko Inc. versus Corbell, F3 Sub 2015 Westlaw 5026190. I brought additional case copies of that case, just for reference, and be happy to pass it out just for your convenience. And
please show them to Mr.
I will. I have an extra copy for him. I'm not going to argue for him. I'm just merely providing it for your convenience. So this case basically summarizes what a court should rely upon, and the OPA in this case, for purposes of granting summary judgment, and that should be admissible evidence, not hearsay, not extraneous evidence. All right. Focusing on the issue in our summary judgment, and I note that, as I understand it, our motion for summary judgment is unopposed. We filed a motion on November 6, 2015. The opposition date came and went. And we therefore subsequently filed a request for disposition. It was due on Friday because of the early closure due to the typhoon. We filed it yesterday. So that was submitted at about 4 yesterday, our request for disposition on this summary judgment. Okay. So the issues on our summary judgment. First, Stanley Consultant was the construction manager. What they did on a weekly basis was hold meetings. The project started in January 2015. The NTP was issued, and thereafter, there were weekly meetings. At these weekly meetings, minutes were kept. And those who participated included Carondo's representatives, Parsons' representatives, DPW representatives, and the project was discussed, but included in every meeting minute was something called a submittal log, which I'm sure you've seen over and over again in our filings. And they're no different than, I think, what in our profession we would refer to as docket sheets in our case filings. It keeps a log of all of the events, the filings, like a docket sheet of what happened during the project with respect to submittals. Submittals are very unique to construction. They're not just submittals. I'm submitting something. Submittals are what contractors submit to an owner, in this case, DPW. And what they do is there's a cover sheet that says submittal. And there's a date and the subject of the submittal. It could be something as mundane as the color of the building and the type of paint versus, in this case, a more critical issue, which is the phasing plan. And we have four critical submittals that impacted the project. And the submittals, not all submittals are as critical, but we submit these were four critical submittals because these were things that delayed the project. And delays that I think we believe were caused by the government. Now, the phasing plan. The phasing plan, and this took me a while to understand, so I think when people think about phasing plan, what does it mean? So we're just going to do this or do that? It's more important than that. What it is the process by which the construction will proceed. How are you going to build this bridge? It's not just, oh, I'm going to demolish those the old 1930 bridge, demolish the existing temporary bridges, which was like built, I think, in 2007, or repaired in 2007, but I think it was built in 2007, which are deteriorating.
I'm not going to hold you to the
date. Yeah, I'm trying to.
The record will speak for itself.
But and then we're going to put a new bridge on top. It's more engaged. It's more important than that. It's the step-by-step process by which every critical part of the construction will occur and how it will occur. Are you going, and a certain part of it's left to the contractor. This is called a contractor's method and methodology. And that's a province that the owner doesn't get involved in. Like, how are you going to paint the wall? You're going to put scaffolding? Are you going to go rent one of those high boys? That's the contractor's business, all right? But there's parts of the phasing plan that are required, and there are certain parts that are contractor's method and methodology, okay? Which the owner and the contractor and the construction manager cannot tell the contractor how to do, because then you're getting, you know, basically construction manager is not allowed to go beyond that. All right. So the phasing plan was critical. And it was submitted, when Corona bid on the project, the award was in March 2014. The contract was signed on June 2010 by the governor. Till the governor signs, there's no contract, right? So.
Could you repeat the dates again?
I don't have the exact date on my head, but March 2014 was when the award was made. The bid was opened in January 2014. Award in March 2014, and the signing of the contract, the last person to sign, of course, is the governor, who signed on June 10th, 2014. 20 days thereafter, Carondo submitted its application for building permit. Okay, so that's sort of how the process started. And then before, the NTP was in early, first week of January 2015, I think it was the 3rd. January 5th, NTP. So these months passed between June 10 when the contract signed, and then we have the submission of the application for building permit was on June 20th. And then we have the approval of the initial building permit, which was in October 2014. All right. Carondo began working on the project, but keep in mind, before you get an NTP, you don't get paid for the work you do. I mean, that's kind of, you know, whether you work for the auditor or any government agency, if there's no NTP, just because there's an award, contract is signed, unless there's an NTP, especially on a project, you don't get paid.
Well, when you say, use the acronym NTP.
Notice to proceed.
You know, I'm just clarifying that. For the
record, do that.
Notice
yeah.
to proceed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, Carondo processed got the building permit in October 2014, and then began working on all the conditions, because bridge projects are different. They're a different animal. Why are they different? They're different because it involves every agency you can possibly think of, and all the ones that are really difficult. Archaeology, because you're near, you know, seaside. Then you've got EPA, and you've got to deal with birds, you've got to deal with fauna, you've got to deal with EPA issues, you've got to deal with drainage issues, you've got to deal with erosion issues. I mean, you got plans, you know, and plans and plans and plans to mitigate all these issues. So it's not like a vertical project, which is a building. You get the plans done, the architect signs off, you get a permit set, you go to contractor's license, not contract, DPW, they give you a permit, you break ground within the next week. You can't do that on a bridge project. It's the nature of the project. It's not like, you know, a regular project. And that's why there's a long lead time between before work is started. And there are still a lot of unknowns, because until you start digging into the ground, you don't, I mean, these things go back, you know, you talk about abutments, culverts, I know, buildings, construction that, you know, going back to 1930s, and for which you don't have any plans or information on. Very limited information, you find more things, which creates, of course, more delay and whatnot. So going back to the phasing plan, the critical thing about the phasing plan is it's the government's plan, design, of how that bridge is going to be. The original 1930 bridge is going to get removed. The temporary existing, we call them the temporary existing bridges, there's actually steel bridges that go right on top of the original 1930 bridges, and there's a gap in between. Okay? So that's, you know, it's sitting right on top of that. Now that's also deteriorated. And what's going to happen is both of them are going to get removed, a new one gets put on. A new concrete bridge gets constructed in its place. So that's in a very general nutshell what the project is required. But how that's going to occur, which side of the road you're going to work on first, the ocean side versus the mountain side, how do you deal with the electrical issues, the poles, which are, and I went out there and looked at it, right off the asphalt. I mean, that's how close it is. And so all of these issues are planned out. Some of the steps are required. They're put. They're specified in the phasing plan. So the contractor looked at it, Corando in this case, and said, you know, this plan, without getting into the details of it, I just wanted to, I think, explain how critical that was, that plan was, decided, you know, we've got to do it another way, because I think this is more efficient, and we'll get the job done, and this is part of the construction of what I call the contractor's methodology, okay, construction methodology. That is their province. So they were going to install a third steel bridge, temporary one, during construction over the existing two bridges so that the cranes can traverse back and forth safely and traffic as well. Okay? And that's important because it's a major safety issue. Cranes, I've learned, are over 20 tons. All right? They're quite heavy. And so the cranes that required, what they're going to do is they're going to put what they call piles, these long things, and they're going to pull them up, and then they're going to put them into place and then pound them down, right? So when you swing that, you got to put it into place and, you know, you got to move back and forth on the bridge. It's got to be able to hold up under the weight of the crane. And Corando was concerned that the existing bridge would not be able to support that, the existing bridges. If the existing temporary bridge collapsed, it would collapse on top of the 1930 bridge. And based on subsequent reports that it got, it determined that it would not be able to withstand the weight. And by the way, the load on the existing temporary bridge, I believe, was 5 tons. That's the steel bridge that we're using right now. And there's no signage on that. So, but it's as I discussed in our papers, it is 5 tons. So being 5 tons, and you got a 20-ton crane, how do you move it back and forth? You go around the island, which doesn't make sense. And DPW said, well, why don't you, Mr. Marlowe said, take it apart. Well, that's wonderful. But you still need a tractor trailer to take it to the other side if you take it apart. And then you need another crane to put it together. Because it's not like Lego, you just put it together. You need a crane to pick up the other part to put it together. So, you know, these were the issues that Corando was dealing with through June of 2015. So we proposed what we call the alternate phasing plan, was submitted on October 27, 2014. It was approved on November 4th, 2014. And it received a notation of EAN, exceptions as noted. And most, if not all, architects and engineers will never say approved because of the liabilities in approving something. So it's always exceptions as noted. That's the best you're going to get out of them. Nobody's going to stamp and say, yeah, approved. And I'm basically opining that this is all good and safe and all that, and later on, if there's something that happens, guess what? The guy who approves it is going to be holding the bag. There are liability issues. And so people don't really approve any. There's no approval anymore. It's just exceptions as noted, and then you go down the list of the boxes you can check, or you can say review and resubmit, or reject it. I mean, these are all options that basically standard practice in the business. Now, our motion for summary judgment focuses on the fact that Stanley deleted, not updated, deleted. There's a big difference. Deleted critical submittals. The most critical submittal that it deleted was the October 2014 submittal that was, and I'm going to use the word quote unquote approved, because they received an exceptions as noted, and there was no requirement that it be resubmitted, or that it be revised, or that it be returned or reviewed again.
Sorry to interrupt. What was the date of that submittal? October 27.
October 27. And if you look at on page 5 of our brief.
2014
to 2015.
14.
All right. Having to do with what again?
It has to do with the phasing plan.
So
it's Caronda's alternate phasing plan. And what it proposed, as I explained, is we would build a third temporary steel bridge during the duration of the project for the crane to traverse over, because of obviously safety, load concerns, and because the crane could move freely and without striking, it just was a smart thing to do, and we believe it was within the contractor's right to do so under the contractor's methodology. All right, so if you look at page 5 of the motion, I list the four critical submittals. The first is the alternate phasing plan, submittal number 562001.001-02. It's exhibit 12 to our Caronda's response to the agency report. It was originally on November 4, 2014, it received a status of exceptions as noted. It doesn't say come back and provide all this submittals and resubmission, just says exceptions as noted. And if you look closely at the submittal logs, many of them, that at the very bottom, there's a color code. And I noted, and I did accept in the motion. The color code says submit, resubmit. It says submit or don't do, no need to, do not submit, resubmit, no need to submit, yes or no. And for this particular one, there was no need to resubmit. It was color-coded by Stanley, consistent with the submittal response itself. So what happened was, just so you understand the process, Caronda sends the submittal to Stanley, the construction manager, with its alternate phasing plan. Stanley reviews it and sends the submittal back on the bottom, well, with comments, and it has a stamp, its own stamp. Submit, resubmit, reject, exceptions as noted, approved. It never checks approved. Nobody ever checks approved. Exceptions as noted. Then you got to look at the exceptions. Very minor. Doesn't say you have to resubmit. It was green light as far as Caronda's concerned. So it starts proceeding and planning its work, the entire work, on that basis. Ordering materials, gearing up, designing whatever it needs to design. Okay? That's how important that phasing plan is. Without any prior notice, on March 10, 2015, 3 months after NTP, a little under 3 months, because NTP was January. But it was four months.
You said that NTP was in January, because you said October 2014 was the building permit approval. So the NTP.
But the NTP did not get issued until January 2015.
January 5th.
Before we proceed, can I just verify that the reporting system is operational?
Yes.
It's working.
It's working.
Okay, good. Sorry.
Okay.
Please.
January 5th?
Yes.
So, March 10, 2015, Stanley sends back the submittal that had previously, what is called submittal, the alternate phasing plan submittal, 562.001-02. Sends it back to Carondo. We want you to, he didn't send it back. It was deleted. Deleted from the log. And when you look at the log, like I said, every week there's an update. So we have meetings, Carondo will have meetings with the various parties, and this is construction meetings, and attached to each of the meeting minutes are change order logs, submittal logs, various logs, construction, that forms part of the project construction documents. And the submittal log, this approved November 4th, 2014, approved alternate plan submittal was deleted. Instead, what shows up is Stanley's March 10th submittal that says, you've got to do all these 17 things on the alternate plan, and we have all these comments, you have to revise and resubmit, and you didn't do all these things, blah, 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 blah. That's fine. They have a right to do that. But you know what? It's 4 months after you approved it. After you gave the green light. So that is a delay caused by the government. We're not saying that all of those points on the March 10th response from to submittal from Stanley was unreasonable or unnecessary. Some of them could have been done later, but they made a list. Okay, fine. But why wasn't it brought up in October, November, or January? In March 10th, that's when it was sent back. Coincidentally, it was deleted from the log. So the approved version, the approved submittal, was deleted from the log. What is going on here? DPW will take the position that it wasn't deleted, it was updated. I think Madam OPA, Madam Auditor, and Mr. Camacho, I don't need to explain the difference to you. I don't think it's a legal issue or an engineering issue. It's pretty obvious what happened. There is no affidavit or evidence in the record explained from DPW explaining why Stanley deleted it. Nothing. No affidavit from Stanley. Stanley is I'm assuming Stanley did this on their own. That's from all the stuff I've seen. That seems to be communication documents. That seems to be the case. Where is Stanley's declaration? Where is Stanley's affidavit? Where is Stanley's explanation? To simply say it was updated doesn't explain it. It is unrefuted. The bottom line, it was deleted. It's undisputed it's deleted. And there's nothing to refute that. So the deletion, we refer to four critical logs. First is the phasing plan. And that created the most delay because it affected the entire project, the construction methodology. It's like your battle plan. If you were going to battle, I don't know much about battles, but I assume, Mr. Camacho, that you know, whether it's your troop, would have a plan. Where are you going to go? How are you going to deal with the logistics? How food is going to be brought? Arms? You know, how many days you're going to be camping? All those things are planned out. You don't just go out and figure out when you get there, and then hopefully something arrives by air. That's what it is, the equivalent of the phasing plan. Yes, some of the decisions are made by the soldiers, you know, at the site, but because you can't plan for everything. But the major parts of it, of a battle plan, is decided. You follow it. And that's exactly what the phasing plan is. And to come back 4 months later and say, oh, by the way, I have these 19 items or 17 items I need you to review, and basically we're revoking it, and then the original phasing plan, alternate phasing plan that was approved, disappeared from the log, it delayed the project. whatever reason, and we to this day, we don't know why Stanley deleted it, because no explanation has been provided. The other critical submittal, and this is on page 5 of our motion, is the GPA-approved underground electrical plan. Part of the electrical issue is because of the crane boom, the swing of the crane boom, when the crane lifts these huge piles, they're like long, they almost look like concrete poles, but they're bigger, and they swing it over to the proper place and make it place it, obviously it, you know, it's going to strike things in its way. Because it, and if you've been down there, you'll see how narrow the road is. And so a crane sitting on one side of the street, now you can't be parking yourself in someone's yard. The contract says you are to operate within your limits. The limits are this square, this area, where you can do your project. And they've gotten, DPW's responsible for getting all the right-of-ways and whatnot, which, by the way, caused part of the delay in the issuance of the NTP. But having said that, I mean, the bottom line is, you know, you have a crane sitting there trying to move things around. If you've been down there, it's just impossible without hitting the poles and trees and whatnot. And so Carondo, I think, correctly proposed to put the underground electrical, put it underground at its cost. This wasn't in the phasing plan. Makes a lot of sense, right? It's great when there's typhoon, you don't have poles coming down. It's great because it has future benefits to the neighborhood. It doesn't cost the government any money. Initially, when they said that, they offered to do this. It was approved. It had an original status on April 22nd of exceptions as noted. And then it was deleted from the submittal log on June 16, 2015, right around the time that the notice of default was issued, June 27, 2015. That's when the notice of default. Coincidence? Only Stanley knows. The traffic plan is part of the phasing plan, how you're going to control the traffic. It's a very big issue because safety and whatnot. And the contract specifically says put the residents and the public safety is paramount over time and construction. That's, you know, that's pretty much a standard on federal contracts, road contracts. Was approved. No exceptions taken on January 13, 2015. Coincidentally, in the March 10, 2015 submittal log, it disappeared. No problems after that. The fourth law, we call these the four critical submittal logs, is an as-built survey, and that was originally got a status of exceptions as noted in November 14, 2014. March 10th, it was deleted from the submittal log. And this as-built survey is part of also what's needed to prosecute the work. And it, you know, so these are key parts of what would be the phasing plan. The point is, as the contracting construction manager, it had a duty to maintain accurate records, construction documents. These aren't notes on a paper pad. These are official contract docket. They're like a docket. You can't go to the Superior Court and start deleting things. And there's a reason why. Think about it. If the submittal log of, let's say, July, at the time of termination, July 2015, were put before you today, how would you know that it had been deleted? You wouldn't. How would you know there were approved submittals? The critical submittals were approved previously. You wouldn't know about it. You know today because Carondo has brought it to your attention. No one except the people who were involved in the project or actually got to the source document and spent a lot of time sorting through everything, assuming it's a complete set, could figure that out. That's why the submittal log is critical. That's why it cannot be altered. And that's why you don't delete. And guess what? Stanley knows how to deal with updates and when you want to get rid of a submittal. You void it. I gave examples of that. Attached. They voided three submittals, but they left the references to the submittals, the dates, and the date is voided. It shows void across the top. So they know how to do that. Where is Stanley in all of this? There is no evidence before this, the OPA explaining the misconduct of Stanley. They are required under their contract to maintain accurate records. Under federal law, they're required to maintain accurate records. They did not do that. They therefore breached. Stanley breached its contract and broke the law when it deleted the four submittals. The law I'm referring to is referenced in my request for debarment dated September 8, 2015. And that was attached. I don't have exact reference, but it was attached to several filings.
But is that just part of your response to the agency report?
Yes, it's okay. It's in, I think, three different places.
I think I saw it.
Yes.
All right, please proceed.
Right. And specifically, Guam Law 9GCA 55.101 states that falsification, I'm sorry, let me put a cite here. Required 55.101 requires that Stanley maintain records of government documents. This is, submittal log is not, like I said, some, you know, notepad writing. It is an official record of the project. We requested that they be debarred on September 8th. A response was given by the agency. I believe they were terminated shortly thereafter, in the next two or three days after the letter went out. DPW terminated them on this particular project, Task 5, not the entire, not with respect to any other Guam project. So Stanley was terminated. The DPW, there was a memo, and this is provided to us, with respect to our debarment request, and it was we received a copy of it, I forget when, but it was dated September 23rd, and it was prepared on DPW letterhead. And with respect to the issue of debarment for falsifying submittal logs, this is the response. Of course, they have a duty to investigate. And I don't know, it doesn't, from this memo, I can't tell what they did or did not do, but I suspect it was, my position was very cursory, and it probably required a little more than what they did. The response was, Caranda also claimed, paragraph 3 on the response in the memo, Caranda also claims that Stanley should be debarred for falsifying submittal logs. Stanley states that the submittal log is used to monitor the status of project submittals and is regularly updated / revised. These updates / revisions were done with Caranda's knowledge, and Caranda failed to raise a concern or object to the practice. As the updating of the submittal log was done with Caranda's knowledge and without objection, I don't consider this to be a valid ground for debarment. There's nothing in the record to support the claim that Stanley intended to defraud Carondo. Okay, so we never addressed the deletion, so we updated and revised it. But what about the deletions? Did anybody ask about it? It's Carondo's fault for not raising it. So if someone's committing a fraud, they're basically saying, well, you know, if someone's committing a fraud, you should have raised it at the time they were committing a fraud. Well, the nature of the fraud is that you don't know when it's committed until there's a loss. It's ridiculous to say, it's absurd to say, Carondo, you should be sitting there and looking for deletions in the submittal log in these minutes. Who would be doing that? Because it's just not done. That's ridiculous. This is absurd. And, you know, what I find offensive is in conclusion. The recommendation is, I recommend that DPW consider whether it is appropriate to debar Carondo and its principals for up to 2 years. This is our government. Retaliation for how dare you question us and our decisions and our judgment. It is pure retaliation. How was Carondo damaged by the falsification of the record? It was damaged greatly. I mean, you know, the lay person will say, well, it's just a list of documents. What difference does it make? Okay, maybe they missed one. No, they didn't miss one. They missed four. They deleted four critical ones at very critical times. Coincidence? I think not. What the deletions did of these four critical submittals is that it created a false record upon which to support the wrongful termination of Carondo. Like I said, maybe they didn't think we would come before OPA. Carondo never appeared before the OPA. Rarely has any litigation. I've been their attorneys for 15 years. Don't fight people. They just do their work and, you know, do their work. They're not sophisticated like the Dick Pacific or the Watts. They just try to do good work and get their work done. They've been on one for a long time. Never had this kind of problem. If you saw a submittal log dated at the time of termination, this, and you didn't know about these other issues, Carondo didn't even know until I started representing them. You would not know today that they've been falsified, that there were prior approvals. The falsification, the deletion of the record was a falsification designed to support the wrongful termination. If you had such great grounds for termination, why do you need to falsify records? Well, that's because Mr. Marlowe, in some emails, have said, I don't know if we want to get into the other arguments on the other motions, but he said in various emails, Jack Marlowe from Stanley, they can finish the project. It's reasonable that they could finish the project within schedule. We can't terminate them on that basis. This is a May 2015 email he wrote. And I guess the longer version of my argument is in my opposition to the summary judgment to all these documents and references. Opposition to
DPW. We're just on your motion for
summary. Right, I know. So it's hard to. My point is this. For this narrow issue, for my summary judgment, one, it's opposed, unopposed. However, if you are going to consider other evidence, then I ask that you consider the arguments we're making. In my request for disposition that was filed yesterday of Carondo's motion for judgment, restate that the motion is unopposed, because it is, and that we are seeking summary judgment on seven issues. First, the finding that Stanley had obligations under its contract, the construction management contract, to maintain accurate and correct records, including submittal logs, which were part of the project documents. Two, a finding that the four critical submittals that received exceptions as noted or no exceptions were approval by Stanley, in which notation meant that Carondo did not have to resubmit unless it expressly stated that. Three, a finding that the deletion of the critical submittals by Stanley from the submittal logs was an improper alteration of the submittal logs and project contract documents, and that in deleting the critical submittals, Stanley improperly altered the documents and breached its CM contract. And such acts by Stanley constitute misconduct. A finding that the deletion of the previously approved critical submittals created a false record that DPW used as the basis for terminating Carondo. A finding that there is no evidence Carondo was informed of the deletion of the critical submittals from the submittal log. We knew they were updated, but we did not know that they were deleted. It's just not done. We did not know this was being perpetrated. The falsification of documents was being perpetrated at that time. Lastly, a finding that Carondo was damaged by Stanley's misconduct when Stanley altered the contract documents to conceal the approvals in order to facilitate and support the improper termination of Carondo's contract. Coincidentally, what is called the contractor's performance analysis, which I have in my office, I don't know if they submitted it to you, is a 3-inch binder that Stanley prepared beginning in June 6, 2015, but didn't complete until 20 plus days after Carondo was terminated. Carondo was terminated on July 10. That contractor performance analysis, which should have been the basis, should have been completed before you even terminate the contractor, was not even completed until July 31st, 2015. DPW didn't get a copy of it until July 2015, because that my copy that I got showed that DPW got it on July 31st, was delivered to DPW on July 31st, 2015, 21 days after Carondo was terminated. What is going on? For these reasons, Carondo believes that these findings are appropriate, that summary judgment should be granted on these issues, that they are, one, it's unopposed, but more importantly, they're unrebutted, unrefuted, and they're not in dispute. How the project was managed and who was managing it doesn't explain what Stanley was doing in deleting it. None of that explains it. Because they can't. And because the answer is so obvious. Thank you. That's on my motion for summary judgment.
Mr. Keeler, do they pose any opposing arguments?
Yes. The Department of Public Works agrees that the October 27th submittal, that the GPA alternate electrical submittal and the other ones referenced by Ms. Deng were extremely important documents. They were critical, the term that she used. However, what is essential to understand is that the project, when it went out to bid, had plans and specifications for the construction of the project. Those were reviewed, those were agreed to. Now, Ms. Tang correctly points out that the contractor had the ability to determine the means and methods for how to construction, the project. There is no dispute as to that. But what is disputed is that when, with regards to the October 27th submittal, Ms. Tang concludes that, quote unquote, the contractor had a green light to proceed with the project is absolutely incorrect. They were instructed, just like they were instructed with regards to the GPA electrical document, to process the appropriate change order. The construction manager does not have the authority under the party's agreement to approve substantial change orders. That's why Carondo was instructed to submit a change order. In all of the mass filings that have been filed on behalf of Carondo, they have completely ignored this requirement. The only person that has the ability and the authority to change the plans and specifications, to change essential terms and conditions of the party's contract, the agreed to and signed contract, is the contracting officer, that being the director of the Department of Public Works. So it is possible that we wouldn't even be dealing with the issue of submittals if Carondo had done as instructed, which was submit the appropriate change order. That it failed to do so, I don't know. But I don't know why. But as of the time of termination, Carondo was still required under the terms and conditions of the contract to construct it according to the approved plans and specifications. And again, there is no doubt that the contractor had the ability to revise the plans. They can do it any way they want. You know, in the moving papers, they talk about how it would be, it's not logical that you would disassemble the crane to cross it over the bridge. Well, that may be. They put in a bid. We don't know what their bid consisted of. We don't know if how they were going to construct the bridge. The government speculates that Carondo didn't know how it would do it, that it hadn't contacted or subcontracted with a third party to address how the bridge work, the crane work, would be completed. There's nothing in their documents to say this is how we intended on doing it at the time that they submitted their bid. So, again, it's just simply incorrect to state that they had a green light. They had an obligation to submit a formal change order that would have been entertained by the Director of the Department of Public Works. The plans that were submitted were not considered to be or to document that the original plans and specifications were in fact incorrect. Carondo was requested to supplement its filings. It failed to do so. Also, there's reference to delays, etc., throughout the motion. It is important to note that the contractor who is performing the work, wasn't making these requests during the time of construction. There were various meetings. Stanley, other parties said, submit your request for a time extension, and they failed to do so. The only thing that they have done for a time extension is to put it in a letter form. Well, anyone who's experienced with a construction project knows that you're not entitled to an extension if it doesn't bear on a critical item in the contract. If you can't show that whatever proposed delay there is impacted a critical portion of the project, then it's considered a concurrent delay. You don't get a time extension. The Carondo was requested numerous times submit a formal time extension. You know, again, in their moving papers, Carondo states that the department refuses to acknowledge that they may be entitled to a time extension, and that's incorrect. All we've done is say, please document it. Provide us the appropriate documentation, and we will review it. We will continue to review it now. The department will sit there and review it if they just simply file the appropriate time extension request per the terms of the contract. It's important to note, irrespective of what the plans and specification notes were, okay, if it's a critical, substantial change to the contract, again, the director has to approve it. Again, it's incumbent upon Carondo to submit a formal change order request. They continued throughout the project to refuse to do so. With respect to the GPA electrical document, it doesn't have an engineer's stamp on it. It's just simply a plan. It's sort of an outline for it. It doesn't address the numerous plethora of other items that are going to be impacted. You're going to have to go under a river. You're going to have to be, you know, where are you going to be locating it? It's going to have impacts that will extend through a variety of different agencies. And that is known by a contractor. You know, you just simply have to submit the full proper document. When that was submitted, Stanley, in the notes that and in the filings that we have provided you, said you still require.
Okay, let's just for clarity.
Yes,
Mr. Keeler, when you say in the filings that were provided, because my understanding is you didn't submit a specific opposition to this motion for summary judgment, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so what exact filing are you?
That would be in the department's motion for summary judgment.
Okay.
And the references.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I believe in there is reference to the minutes to a April 27th meeting. Letter, and that in there does a number of things. One is it references Carondo's request for like a 15-day extension. Not 120, not 240. You know, in that and earlier correspondence in the spring of this year, Carondo confirms, documents that there have been delays and they're responsible for them. The delays that Ms. Tang is asserting are all created after the termination. They weren't requested by the contractor during the project term by itself. With the exception of the one that I just referenced, with the exception of, I believe there was a request for 120 days, which again, they were requested to document and provide a proper claim, which they failed to do and continue today, failed to do. I don't understand the argument that Stanley is retaliating. It's the first time I've heard it that there's a retaliatory effort by Stanley. That's the first time I've heard that term. It doesn't make sense to me. If you review the record, Carondo and its documents recite at, you know, that in April, Stanley was saying, no, we should give them additional time. So there, you have documentation stating we should help you, and then there's a claim of retaliatory. They're just simply inconsistent. But the written documentation shows that Stanley was trying to assist. There's also, again, in our motion for summary judgment, there's also written documentation with regards to, the critical GPA electrical submittal, where exchange of emails where Stanley states, or Mr. Marlowe of Stanley states, they're not doing anything. It was an email from Stanley to Parsons Brinkerhoff. And it was an email saying to Mr. Kobayashi, could you please contact GPA, and let's try to get a meeting together with all these people so that we can do what we can to quote-unquote expedite the project. How that is considered retaliatory, I don't know. You've got written documentation that the construction manager is doing what he can to expedite the project. You've got written documentation that the GPA submittal that was considered critical doesn't have an engineer stamp on it, and that Coronda wasn't doing anything to move it forward. With regards to the submittals, Ms. Tang herself just quoted, you know, the language that Stanley had stated, which was that it was considered a breathing, living document. That what he was using these submittals for was in order to update the current status. Filings weren't deleted. Submittal log was updated and corrected. Now, Seville and Tang's own client states, and that would be Parsons Transportation Group, he's testified that while updating and correcting the submittal log is not common, it's also not uncommon. So the assertion that this is some type of fraud just doesn't carry weight. Again, you've got written documentation that Mr. Marlowe of Stanley is trying to do what he can to keep Coronda on the project. He's trying to do what he can to quote-unquote expedite the project. And the idea that his updating and correcting what he views as updating and correcting the logs automatically translates into fraud, they're just not consistent. It just doesn't make sense. There's no logic to it. And again, Coronda simply wasn't moving forward on the project. There were a series of meetings earlier in the spring of this year to prod them to get to do stuff, to again request that they submit the required change order proposals, and they simply failed to do so. They failed to move forward on the GPA electrical alternate plan.
You made that argument twice.
Yeah, just in closing, it just simply isn't consistent with the documentation.
Now, just for clarity, what was the construction methodology for this project? I mean, was it a turnkey type operation? Was it a build-to-spec type operation?
Yes, build-to-spec.
Build-to-spec?
Yes.
Were the specs part of the...
Plans and specifications were part of the package, and they were agreed to and part of the contract.
Was there a timeline? Build to spec, or in the specifications, or
the contract term was 450 days.
And that's in the RFP. Was it an RFP or an IFP?
It was a RFP. I wanted to say.
Order different 50 days starting when?
From the notice to proceed, which would have been January 5th, 2015.
January 25th?
January 5th.
January 5th of 2015?
That's correct.
Okay. You have anything else to add, Mr. Keeler? This is just on this motion. You'll have the opportunity to argue yours.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Very briefly?
Very briefly.
Very briefly. Okay. Our narrow issue on summary judgment, Toronto summary judgment, is whether Stanley breached the contract and that whether Stanley deleted the logs, critical logs, and that the deletion of the logs, the critical logs, damaged Toronto. Nothing in the record rebuts that, refutes that. It's undisputed. It's unopposed. But one other point, remember the case I just gave you. It has to be personal knowledge. There is, while Mr. Keeler has argued that Mr. Marlowe, there are affidavits explaining why, I think his words were, Mr. Marlowe expediting and correcting and updating the submittal log. Mr. Marlowe has not submitted an affidavit. Nobody from Stanley has. No one except Stanley, as I assume, has personal knowledge as to the deletions in the submission, deletions of the submittal logs. For that reason, summary judgment should be granted on this narrow issue. With respect, one other point I'd like to make. The March 1st, 2015, it's the revocation of the earlier approval of the phasing plan. It does, nowhere in this document does it say, oh, submit your change order. It just says, do this laundry list of, you know, 13 things and give us some plans and stuff. It doesn't say, I don't have authority to do this. You need to submit a formal change order. None of the meeting's minutes reflect that. So that is just not accurate. And then I think one other inaccuracy is that the retaliation comment that I made was in specific reference to the memo of the director.
But Ms. Tang, as we're arguing your motion for summary judgment,
okay, I just
it's not, there is no argument concerning
those other issues. You're
retaliation.
Right.
I know you made the you make.
But
the
it was
argument.
In correct connection with the debarment proceedings. It was not. I did not say. I think Mr. Keeler believed that I had argued that Carando believed that DPW was retaliating. I was referencing the debarment memo.
As I understand your motion, it is more arguing generally. That's encapsulated on page 6. The motion that the deletion of the prior approved submittals created a false record that DPW used as a basis for terminating.
That's correct.
Right, so that's
and then the
kind of a summary statement for you.
Correct.
Very well. Okay,
thank
so
you.
I got it. All right. Your next motion, Ms. Tang.
Okay, my next motion is.
And I believe that was the motion, or you made a request for subpoenas?
Yes, and I think it's unopposed, and I could be wrong, but.
Okay, I'm going to grant that request. You have the right to.
Right,
only,
so just to be clear, they are. So I'll issue the subpoena, Mr. Camacho.
Well, you may draft them for the OPA's review and signature.
I will do that.
Okay.
All right.
Just like you do in court.
All right, I understand. Okay. So just to confirm,
that,
there
that
would be
same thing goes for the government as well. All right, do we
just
need
to confirm the three names, Larry, Carl Dominguez, Stanley's employees, Mr. Senecal, and Mr. Marlowe. Those are the three individuals. And just so there's no misunderstanding,
First of all, does the government object to any issuing subpoenas? And I believe that the OPA does have the authority to issue subpoenas upon request of a party. So,
And Mr. Leandro is going to be a major witness, and I just want to make sure, is there any reason that, I'm assuming we don't, I've talked to Mr. Keeler about this, there's no reason to have to subpoena him, am I correct? He's going to be on island?
Are you going to make Mr. Leandro, that's the director of DPW,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely. I need to make sure that he'll be on island.
Okay, we'll discuss all that at the pre-hearing.
Okay.
So your request for subpoenas is approved, and then your next motion was.
We can deal with this one, the motion to strike. Now, that was with respect to the motion for summary judgment, the two affidavits that had placeholders and then were submitted.
Okay, what is the basis of your motion to
strike?
5 days
later. The motion to strike was, it has to do with the motion for summary judgment that was filed by DPW. The motion to strike was referred to the two declarations of Mr. Lanning and Mr. Pecht. And those two declarations were not filed until the motion deadline set by Mr. Camacho yourself was November 6th.
Mm-hmm.
They filed the motion timely, except they had a placeholder for the declarations. Of course, they quoted from it, which basically is the meat of the motion. And
so that was filed.
It was filed on the 9th.
On the 9th?
Right. And so I filed our motion to strike on the 8th, opposing it. I'm sorry, we filed a motion to strike on the 9th, and then on the 10th, the declarations were filed.
Is there any reason the declarations were filed late, Mr. Keeler?
The declarations were prepared in a timely manner. The answer is yes.
Okay, but they were basically, you filed your motion timely. Yeah. These are just...
Correct. They were forwarded off to off-filing general counsel. And because Parsons Transportation Group is unable to coordinate with its local counsel on a Route 4 project, which is Ms. Seville's husband and partner. So they were not able to submit them to local counsel for review. It's a corporation. Mr. Lanning is not authorized to sign declarations unless it's been approved. And so he forwarded it, as he advises me, on Thursday. So that would have given his general counsel an entire day to review it. It wasn't anticipated there would be any problem.
How long was it filed after your motion?
It was filed on Tuesday morning.
So just a few days? Would it be fair to say 2 working days?
4 days.
Two working days.
2 weeks. Yes.
Okay. And then... And
the general counsel had personal issues and just simply wasn't able to review it. Again, not able. We're dealing with a different time zone, different date.
Okay, I understand that part. Ms. Tang, do you have any response to that?
You know, first of all, it wasn't even signed until the 9th. It was filed on the 6th, but it wasn't signed until the 9th. But he quoted it. Carondo is constantly having to chase documents, wonder when the next filing is going to happen. We don't know if something should be served on us. We have to call your office to find out if it's been filed. We're at some point, we are prejudiced.
But in this case, you did file an opposition to their motion for...
Without waiving the motion to strike? First sentence is, without waiving the strike, because I can't assume to know how you will resolve the motion to strike. So I obviously have to do the safe thing, and the prudent thing is to file an opposition without waiving.
Okay.
We reserved our right.
Well, I'm going to find that the delay of 2 working days was reasonable under the circumstances, considering they filed their motion timely. And these were just, I believe, exhibits to your motion?
That's correct.
Supporting affidavits to your motion?
Declarations.
Declarations, rather. Okay.
Oh, one other note.
Yes.
We weren't served with the motion for summary judgment until Monday. So we were completely unaware of the fact that the motion had been filed on Friday. So to say that we had 4 days, it's not accurate. They didn't even serve us. We didn't even know about the motion for summary judgment until Monday, the same day we filed our motion to strike.
And I do believe you were supposed to, Mr. Keeler, had served Ms. Tang the same day that you filed the motion.
Absolutely.
And there was a two-day gap there?
Yes.
Okay.
And we would have accepted electronic service. I mean, I won't make traffic is hard on Friday. I get it. Okay. But even that courtesy wasn't given.
But I'm going to basically deny your motion to strike on those grounds. I'll issue this in writing. But I will also, I am having to agree with Ms. Tang to the extent that the government's general duty to file things like a complete procurement record to follow the orders of the hearing officer in regard to the filing deadlines and also when to serve the parties. I'm going to have to state that you're kind of pushing the envelope of the timeliness of these, and there are sanctions if this kind of conduct continues.
It will not continue.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, but I'll put the denial in writing and give the grounds as to why. Now, your fourth
and last
motion was
motion for discovery.
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, so. Following the filing of the motion for discovery, the hard thing about, and this is not, it's just difficult because there's no formal discovery procedure in the OPA. I know there are efforts around to do that, but that puts parties such as us in a disadvantage. And so what we have, the tools we have are the Sunshine Act and the Freedom of Information Act. And when it's followed, it works. When it isn't followed, it doesn't work. And there's really no way to know whether you're getting it all or not getting it all. And there's no, and until you spend a lot of time and money, go to Superior Court and enforce it, months down the line, this case is over. So there's a dilemma. Okay, I'm just voicing it, and I understand this is, you know, and I'm not blaming DBW for it. I'm just saying this is a dilemma. But we do the best we can, and we have. And I've sent 4 FOIA requests, and I won't go through all the emails we went through, but it was a trying exercise. And while there were a lot of emails and documents produced, I will represent to you. I have reviewed every single page and every single document. Thousands of pages. Because my client stands to lose, his livelihood because of people sitting around DPW who make decisions that we think are wrong. It is important to have these documents. I'm sorry if they feel harassed. I'm sorry if they think that relevance should be inserted in the statutory definition of what should be produced under the Sunshine Act. It isn't. Mr. Keeler or somebody else's opinion on what is relevant is irrelevant. That is not the law. My client has millions of dollars to lose, and someone's sitting there complaining. That is not right. There's a reason for the Sunshine Act. It's transparency. With transparency, you may have some honesty and good government. You have the record. You tell me whether you think there's transparency and good government going on here.
Ms. Tang.
Now, I'm sorry.
Go into the record. I know you're going to argue the Sunshine Act here, but it's the Superior Court of Guam that enforces the Sunshine Act.
Right.
What we enforce, and my question to you here is the procurement record submitted by DPW Complete? That's what we enforce. That's their duty here.
The difference of this case and many of your other cases is that this is going beyond the procurement. This is the termination of a contract, and a termination that involves, because it's a construction contract, it involves a lot of documents. Okay, and granted, it's hard to say what's relevant or not, but the issues have come into focus in the last 2 weeks. We certainly have many opportunities to augment. What we've had to do was FOIA the federal highway. They gave us a quote of $3,000 to get documents because we didn't know if we were getting the complete record. And my client authorized me to do that because we had to know. Fortunately, when the final bill came out, it was only $1,000. But we found communications in that that were never produced, that were relevant. And I don't want to make a list of all of the things. I think if I'm allowed to, I would simply like to augment the procurement record because I don't want to be bogged down in motions, and I don't want to argue about what he thinks is relevant and what we think is relevant. The bottom line is it needs to be in the record.
Have you had the opportunity to review the procurement record submitted in this matter by DPW?
To the extent that there's any confidential documents, I have not received those, obviously, because they're under seal.
Okay.
But the other ones I have.
Mr. Keeler, did you file I also advise you that if any documents you thought were confidential, you were supposed to create a privilege law and submit the actual confidential documents to the OPA, along with this log that you were supposed to have submitted to Ms. Tang so she at least knows the existence of these privileged documents. So was that are any documents privileged, first of all? Do you, dear believe?
I don't know.
I know there are thousands of pages in this.
Yeah.
This is also an expedited proceeding, which makes it all the more challenging.
I would have to check with Parsons Transportation Group whether they've held back anything. I do not know.
Okay. Did you submit the complete procurement record as well?
I did. The department has submitted everything that it has, everything related to the project. At no time did I make any sort of independent analysis, at least isn't relative. The department had learned on November 9th that there were additional emails that had not been provided. Those wouldn't have been provided. They weren't provided by Parsons Transportation Group. They weren't provided by Parsons Brinkerhoff. They advised me of that on November 9th. On November 9th, I emailed Ms. Tang, notified her of it, provided the one that I had had, and told her that DPW had instructed the two groups, Parsons Transportation Group, Parsons Brinkerhoff, to immediately supplement the record. They did immediately supplement the record. Those were filed with Ms. Tang on Thursday and Friday. The OPA's record is being supplemented. And in addition to what we're supplementing with, and that's the last of everything that they tell me there's anything related to the project on, we're also providing, just for informational purposes, the responses that the department has been forced to make with regards to the four FOIA requests, just for informational purposes. I don't believe you're going to review it. I don't plan on reviewing it.
Well, what I'm interested in, as my order stated, was the actual solicitation documents for the project. The categories are very broad. The communications,
yes.
Such as emails, those are all included. Ms. Tang is correct about that. So, and you have a continuing duty. So, if you discover anything else that hasn't been disclosed, I'm going to order that you disclose it by augmenting the record. Likewise, once again, if there's anything that you feel is privileged, you have to give that document to the OPA in camera, of course, but create a privilege log and serve that upon Ms. Tang as well. So she's aware, not only is it a privileged log, but you also have to state what ground you believe that document is privileged under. So are there any, and I'll just ask Ms. Tang, since I just briefly read your motion, it seems to be more prophylactic in the sense that you're kind of asking me to intercede to ensure that all relevant documents are produced versus arguing specific documents you feel are not. Is that correct?
So yes, since the filing of the motion, motion for discovery, we've received documents Thursday and Friday. Of course, it wasn't timely enough to put in our opposition, but we did our best through the typhoon and worked over the weekend, reviewed a ton of documents, and put together a very nice chart for you to show you how late the projects, all the other projects were. And so I think the simplest way, I don't want to get bogged down in this, I think there's a lot of other relevant information relating to this protest that I think should be in the record. And we will, I have reviewed every single document, but I will put together, I will augment, Karanda will augment the procurement record just to simplify matters, and you know, to the extent that the government wants to oppose it, that's fine. But the documents received Thursday and Friday were the FOIA Act responses, not procurement responses. They're not to augment them. There have, since the last major filing by the government, my understanding is there have been no subsequent augmentation of the procurement record. All of these were just our effort to obtain information via FOIA and Sunshine Act.
Okay, but our job here, just to remind you, according to statute, is based on the record that's produced here, and a hefty part of that, of course, is the procurement record from the purchasing agency, basically decide to know that which is appealed, that which is properly before the public auditor. Hence, we don't conduct lengthy discovery such as is authorized by the rules of civil procedure, which don't apply here, simply for the fact that by law, this is an expedited proceeding.
Right.
And we are using or relying more or less on the record, the procurement record, but also the record. If there's anything you feel in the FOIA request that's relevant to your arguments, you're going to, or if you want to augment the record as you speak or preserve the record here, yes, you may file.
I appreciate that.
And then seek to admit them during the hearing.
Well,
in this matter.
Should we Well, okay, well, as a couple of comments in response to that. First of all, I agree it's an expedited. I agree that there are limitations within the statute. But the problem is, the regardless of whether it's expedited, it needs to be a complete record. Okay? And that complete record should be the basis. If there's a disagreement on which, whether it's complete or not, that should be addressed to the extent that parties are aware of it. But
it,
so I would
it needs
ask,
to be, not only does it be, okay, we talk about a complete record, complete in the sense that it covers. Now, number one, what has to be complete is the procurement record. There's no wiggle room there, but in terms of any other documents and evidence, they kind of have to be relevant to the issues that you raise on.
Right. I'm not suggesting.
Otherwise, it's not properly before.
I'm not suggesting we put the entire FOIA of the case. I think there are issues relevant to that. I think if you have a preference, if you're saying that you would like us to submit it at.
Well, I'm not. Okay, it's your case, so.
I would like
the opportunity. At the hearing, if you have any other documents, for example, you will have. When we get to the pre-hearing conference, you'll have the opportunity to. There'll be a scheduling order there where you can file your exhibits, which you seek to introduce, or before a witness, or seek to introduce at the hearing, such as summaries. You pointed out one,
right,
for example.
We can talk about it later if you like.
That's correct. So that would be in more or less there. But here, I'm going to basically rule on the motion for discovery. I believe this has been previously disposed of in my prior order, ordering the government to.
Can I comment, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
Briefly.
Very briefly. Again, the documents that were filed, provided to Ms. Tang, yes, or Thursday, Friday of last week, I viewed it as part of the procurement record. So with the filing that's with the OPA, the first two filings are those. One's Parsons Transportation Group, their emails. The other is the Parsons Brinkerhoff. So those supplement the procurement record. Those two entities tell me they have absolutely nothing else to file. So I will double check on that and follow up on it. The other four items that we filed are the FOIA requests. So we provide those. Again, I don't believe those are required to be here. We've already filed them. I wanted you to see just the scope of what we were required to do.
All right. Anything else concerning this issue?
No.
All right. Now, so my ruling is going to be this is dealt with by the prior order requiring the government to submit the entire procurement record. Ms. Tang, if you come across anything you believe wasn't submitted, I'm going to permit you to file the requisite motion compelling them to follow my previous order with this matter. Should you come across anything you feel they should have filed, they didn't file, or is not there? I believe the OPA does have the procurement record they filed, should you want to review that as well.
I think that would be helpful. I'm a little confused, so perhaps when I'll sit down with the record and check our record to make sure we have a complete set. Thank you.
Because I've already ordered them to produce it, so like I said, if there's anything you feel that they didn't comply with, you're certainly free to file the appropriate pleading to compel them to. Okay? All right. And then you didn't have any other motions except for those four. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm going to take your motion to for summary judgment under advisement, and we'll issue a decision prior to the hearing. Now, the government filed at least two motions, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, one was a motion for summary judgment?
That's correct.
Okay, Mr. Keeler, you have the floor for your motion for summary judgment.
Okay, well, this would be brave. The government doesn't want to vigorously argue the motion for summary judgment. I believe there's been the issues of the government's good faith. I believe it's clear that the director and Department of Public Works has acted in good faith at all times. However, that has been raised as an issue. I believe it's more properly addressed at the hearing. So we're not going to argue in detail our motion, but I would like the record to reflect a number of items. One is Ms. Tang's own client, Parsons Transportation Group, has testified that while updating and correcting the submittal log is not common, it also is not uncommon. The second item we'd like to reflect is the construction manager has no authority to amend the party's contract. Carondo was under an affirmative obligation for any major or quote-unquote critical submittals to immediately file or timely file with the Department of Public Works a change order proposal. Thus, you know, with the October 27th submittal as well as with the GPA's proposal that was not marked by an engineer, they simply should have, they were required to file a change order proposal. And that's all we have.
Ms.
Thank you. All right. I'm not clear. Is DPW withdrawing its motion?
No.
I'm just confused when he said we are not properly, it should be properly addressed at the hearing. So is it being kicked over to the
no.
Okay, I just want to confirm.
No,
that.
No, this is your opportunity to oppose any of the arguments he makes in summary judgment. Please proceed.
Okay. So, with respect to their motion for summary judgment, they seek summary judgment on three issues. Whether, one, Carondo, summary judgment that Carondo breaches contract, two, Stanley's updating of the submittals was a correction and therefore proper, and three, whether DPW acted in good faith. A lot of some of these were argued earlier, so I'll try to be very brief and not make the same arguments. One, first argument, first, Carondo, it is disputed that Carondo breached a contract. There is a material issues, genuine material issues in dispute. There's no question about that. Our position is the original phasing plan was not workable, and therefore we came up with an alternate phasing plan. And if the evidence is shown, the original phasing plan was not constructible because the existing temporary steel bridge, that is the one that we are all still using, could not support the load of the crane. And in fact, referring to Exhibit C of my declaration attached to the opposition, I quote an email, an internal email between Parsons and their team and DPW, Parsons Brinkerhoff, which is a different entity to Parsons Transportation. They're two separate independent entities. And this is from PB, Parsons Brinkerhoff. He states, engineer, I can't find any evidence that we informed the contractor of the fact that the bridge cannot carry Guam legal loads during bidding process. And that the bridge, was never load posted. We feel that this could open us up to a claim, as in the fact that this affected his means and methods of constructing the bridge and moving material equipment. This is Exhibit C. It's a chain email between June 8th and June 9th. And it's at page 6 of that email. What does this email say? One, we didn't tell the contractor or any of the bidder that there's a problem. The bridge can't carry the load. It has to do with the crane going back and forth. And this might open them up. And two, that they didn't post signs as 5-ton load that they were supposed to do under ASHCO, the governing statute. And the third point from this email is that they felt that it could open up DPW to a claim that this issue affected the contractor's means and method. He further states in this email on page 3-4 of our exhibit C that this, I think, supports our position that they were not sure of the ability of the existing temporary bridge to carry the necessary loads, having reviewed the report that Caronda submitted on the load analysis, quote, it is unclear, this is with respect to the structural assessment analysis that Caronda submitted to DPW, it is unclear, quote, it is unclear whether, quote, and I put in back brackets, structural assessment report, it is unclear whether the structural assessment report, close bracket, analysis is too conservative. They were unable to determine in June of 2015, the first week, 8th and 9th, in the midst of terminating Caronda. They were having this discussion about, well, did we disclose this to them? Should we have told them the crane might have an issue, the bridge can't handle the load? It might open up us up to a claim, maybe? Maybe that was a good, perfect time to tell Caronda, you know what, you're right. We have the same concern. We forgot to tell you. But did they do that? No. And by the way, I didn't get this in FOIA. I got it attached to one of the, this is the quote-unquote famous Exhibit J that's referenced in the motion for discovery. This is the email that's Exhibit J. We didn't get this in our Sunshine Act request. It was filed as part of their filings, and we said, oh my gosh. And it was partially redacted, so we asked for a fully unredacted version.
Is this mentioned anywhere in your opposition?
Yes, Exhibit C.
Exhibit C, okay.
I call it Exhibit C, but it is the disputed Exhibit J that's floating around.
But it's Exhibit J somewhere else.
Yes.
Okay.
Fine. And it's referenced in my motion to strike, you know, not motion, motion for discovery. So I just want to, you know, when you talk about, well, what was produced and not produced, well, this is kind of important, I think. I think it's very important. Keep in mind the time frame. Determination was on July 10th.
Now, Ms. Tang, I'm going to have to ask you to be a little briefer because we do have another.
Okay,
case
I will. All right. Okay. I will do
we
that.
We have another one
because I know
of their motions as well.
We'll do. Okay. So I talked.
You have your pleading.
All right, and the second issue on the unconstructability, the crane boom issue, which I discussed earlier, and we of course submitted that.
Okay.
On the building permit, that's very clear. We got it in October, not in March. All right.
Okay. And these are all your arguments. That,
right. In our opposition.
Material facts that don't justify a motion.
Right.
Or granting a motion for summary judgment.
Progress of work. This is critical, and I didn't touch on this because I didn't want to. They claim, DPW claims that only 1% of permanent work was done. Madam Auditor, you raised it at the last hearing. You said, how much money was paid? You were interested in that. That caused me to look. And I found out that they were paid. That certification that on, this is, I find it quite shocking, that payment application number one was processed and signed off by Stanley in April of 2015, signed off by Mr. Leon Guerrero and his staff. I think Mr. Leon Guerrero was June 10, and then his staff was June 28th or thereabouts. The same time they were terminating him, Caronda. Okay? This is 100. Okay, a DPW certified payment on July 6th. Engineer certified June 27th when it issued a notice of default. The same time they were notifying, they're certifying payment. And the important thing about the certification is, Stanley, Mr. Marlowe says there's 5% completion. Everywhere in DPW's documents is, oh, 1%, let's kick him off the project. It's either 3.78 or it's 5%. 3.78 being that number is floated around as well in the meeting notes. The meeting notes and record shows 3.79%. But a certification in April for payment application one says 5%. For $195,000, that money came in around the time they were terminated, and then DPW said, oh, let's just return it back to Federal Highway. That all that is in the record or attached to our opposition.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to belabor the point about the updating and deletion. I think that's pretty much been discussed and beaten to death. Very quickly about the bad faith allegation, it was the burden of proof is on DPW to terminate a contractor. They have to reasonably believe there was, quote unquote, no reasonable likelihood the contractor can perform the entire contract effort within the remaining time for the contract performance. Carando disputes that, and even more importantly, the email, in our Exhibit J, we quote Mr. Marlowe in an email he sent to his group, dated May 7, 2015. He states, Carando has 327 days remaining in their time for completion. As I stated at the meeting today, yesterday, I do not believe that we can say that there is no reasonable likelihood that the contractor could perform the entire contract effort within the remaining time. The surety will have considerable financial incentive to pursue a claim of termination for owner convenience rather than contractor default. I'm reviewing the contract terms for potential breach of contracts in other areas. I will summarize and forward that when done for your consideration. DPW may be able to include breach of contract in the grounds for termination. A breach may be more supportable than a failure to complete within the contract period. All of the evidence showed they were more interested in terminating. In March, the idea in Mr. Leon Groh's declaration, I think it was attached to the agency report, I forget which. He says in March they started talking about termination. It's undisputed. And then these submitted logs get altered. Deletions are made to critical logs. And then we have made communications about, well, how are we going to do this? Well, maybe we should look at breaches. So we get all these breaches. But guess what? In April, when they approved the payment, they certified that it was complying with all the contract terms. Everybody. That's what a certification showed. Okay. And so at the end of the day,
we're running out of time.
It's pretextual. It was bad faith, and it was wrongful. Thank you.
Mr. Keeler, do you have any rebuttal?
Just
did you file a reply to their opposition memo?
No.
Very well. Okay.
Again, I want to note for the record, none of the filings and none of the comments here or arguments here today have addressed the fact that there were plans and specifications that were part of the project that were approved and agreed upon as part of the contract. There was never a change order to change the means and methods. Government does not dispute that the contractor had the ability to do that. It disputes the fact that the construction manager had the authority to alter substantial and material terms of the contract. Again, Carando had an affirmative obligation and has never said anything in response to what is a very fundamental and basic contract term. The only one who had the authority to change that was the contracting officer, being the department, the director of the Department of Public Works. With regards to the 3.7, 8, or 9 that was referenced, the department's notice of termination says 1% of the permanent work. With the mobilization of a project, there are going to be a number of expenses, you know, with processing, addressing, permits, things of that nature. So that 3.78 may be an entirely accurate figure. It doesn't mean that the government's assessment is incorrect. The government's assessment was that 1% of the permanent work on the project site was in fact completed. So mobilization, other items have to be paid for, but only 1% of the project was completed at the time. And the other items are essentially what we've already presented.
Okay. And on your final motion of the disqualification of civilian Tammy?
Yep.
When,
you have the floor.
Okay.
Briefly. Anything outside of your...
Yes, well, when I stated I was going to be making that motion, you gave me a very skeptical look, and I fully appreciate that. I've practiced law for 30 years. I've never filed a motion of this nature. Parsons Transportation Group, or I'd like to just recite that I'd like to go over what the Guam Transportation Group is. The Guam Transportation Group was formed in 2010. It was done as part of the military build-out and was needed owing to the need to overhaul the utility and road infrastructure in order to address military needs. At that time, as of now, it was acknowledged and remains acknowledged that the Department of Public Works does not have the resources, does not have the personnel in order to fulfill all the requirements that are that go hand in hand with the federally funded projects. So at that time, and since then, Guam Transportation Group has been retained as the consultant for the Department of Public Works. When we talk about not producing materials, when we talk about actions and consulting, we're talking about Guam or Parsons Transportation Group. Okay? This group consults with the department on a weekly, if not daily, basis. As part of the Guam Transportation Group, they have weekly meetings. They go, and just as Mike Lanning has in his declaration stated, that...
But here's, I'll cut to the chase, Mr. Keeler.
Sure.
In your argument, and I know you cite various rules of the professional rules
Correct.
Of conduct, but who's the enforcing body for those rules? Is it the OPA?
No, that would be the Superior Court.
That's correct. And did you cite any, did you find any authority showing how the OPA could enforce the rules of professional conduct if this, I do understand your motion. I do understand how you say there's a, it's basically based on conflict. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And, but the, where in your motion do you actually show any legal authority that the OPA has to enforce those rules of professional conduct?
It doesn't exist. I was hoping that the OPA would share my concern and that it wouldn't be necessary to refer it to the court system.
Just for clarification, who is the transportation group? Who's the body? You said Parsons is one, but who are the members?
The Guam Transportation Group?
Yes.
That has
that you were referring
Federal
to.
Highway Administration, that's Rochelle Takara. That would be Parsons Brinkerhoff. That would be Parsons Transportation Group. That would be the director and deputy director, as well as the Highway Administration officer for DPW, as well as myself. And so that group...
You are part of that?
And I sit in on it, yes.
And the Parsons... Just for for clarity, the Parsons Transportation Group is a separate group from Parsons Brinkerhoff?
That's correct. Parsons Brinkerhoff, they've been separate entities for, I think, close to 100 years.
Are they affiliated?
They're separate entities. They cooperate.
Huh? We'll offer to make a statement.
Okay. All right. So what is the conflict?
The conflict is that Ms. Tang's firm represents Parsons Transportation Group. Ms. Tang has filed motions to strike their declarations.
Okay.
Ms. Tang has acknowledged that in her response that she attempted to take the deposition of Mike Lanning, which obviously would have been in an adversarial setting in this proceeding. She contacted him directly. He has local counsel, he's got general counsel in the states. She's also acknowledged that if Parsons Transportation Group has to testify in this, which is essential since they're one of the main entities here for the department, that she's not going to be able to cross-examine them, and she'll have to make other arrangements. It seems to me it's just
straight...
forward in black and white.
So Ms. Tang is the counsel for Parsons?
Her husband and partner.
Is the counsel for?
Parsons Transportation Group.
And Parsons Transport is separate from Parsons Brinkerhoff?
That is correct.
They just happen to have the name Parsons?
That's correct.
I'd like to respond, please.
Is that the gist of the...
Yes.
Proceed, Ms. Tang.
First and foremost, it is a complete misrepresentation and a misstatement to say that I contacted Mike Lanning. I have never talked to Mike Lanning, and I have never communicated with him verbally or by email. I have no idea what Mr. Keeler is talking about. So that is a complete misrepresentation. Secondly, DPW lacks standing. DPW is not the client. All right? The only thing, PPG is the repository for documents. That does not, for producing Sunshine Act documents and whatnot, that does not make them a party to this appeal or adverse. Anybody can ask for documents. The fact that DPW says, Parsons, go get it, PTG, go get it for us, doesn't create a conflict. They don't like the fact that I'm asking for documents that expose them. That's the problem. And then they want to get rid of us because they don't want Caronda to have competent counsel. That is the crux of the issue here. And that's how we see it. We are not seeking discovery from PTG. I have withdrawn. The only reason I asked to take the deposition of Mr. Lanning, which has since been withdrawn, was because we were not getting documents and responses. So you've seen those numerous emails. Had Mr. Keeler been responding and reading the Sunshine Act, we wouldn't have a number of these discussions. Instead of defending its case on its merits, DPW's strategy is get rid of the lawyer. This is pretty common, and this is classic. Cross-examination. We submitted the Walmart case. I have an extra copy if you'd like it.
I have your pleadings.
Right. So
please, if it's in the pleadings, I've already got it.
Right.
We don't
Walmart
have much
case.
Time.
If we do not, for a case in chief, we are the appellant. We have subpoenaed Stanley. We can make our case. We will make our case. We don't need PTG witnesses. We don't. Because really, you see our case. Look at the summary judgment. It's pretty clear what they plead cases. DPW is trying to bring in all of these GTG relationships. The bottom line is, did Stanley delete those records? Were they covering up? Were they trying to set up a wrongful termination? Those emails, the communications, all of those things. That's all we need. And we can prove it. If they decide to call PTG, and it's all done to disqualify us, I am prepared. Caronda, we can do the Chinese wall and have another counsel cross-examine. Not an issue. I don't need it. I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's necessary. Thank you.
Mr. Keeler, about?
Yeah, two items. I believe it should be referenced in my motion to disqualify. However, there was a email. I can't remember the exact date of it, but it was where Ms. Tang wrote Mr. Lanning directly. And that is certainly after she wasn't getting much cooperation from me on that because they had told me they weren't interested. So Mr. Lanning simply forwarded that to me and stated he wasn't going to respond.
I'm sorry, I don't have that email. I would like to see it because
I'm
shocked. I'll
provide it to you this afternoon.
Well, hang on.
That is not even in the record. He makes an allegation.
Ms. Tang, please.
This is ridiculous.
Okay. Ms. Tang, we've heard your argument. Mr. Keeler, I am going through your motion for the second time, and where do you reference the email that you're speaking about?
I don't have that. I can certainly provide it this afternoon.
No, I'm saying in your motion. Can you reference that email or is this something outside of the motion?
if you are going to provide me with a copy of that email,
yes,
please provide Ms. King with a copy as well. Okay.
In what manner can I submit that?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to order that you do so at this time. That might come in a written order should I deal with your motion. Do you have any other rebuttal?
Well, no, I'd just also like the record to reflect that, you know, when Ms. Tang, and again, I have submitted the four FOIA requests because I want you to see the breadth of what was requested, because I think it's fair and obvious when you take a look at it, requesting every legitimate or document related to a federal highway project, all federal highway projects since 2010, is unreasonable. And so I would like the record to reflect that I wrote her on October 7th stating these requests are serious concern as they appear to have little, if any, relationship to Carondo's breach of contract appeal to the OPA. Forcing DPW to respond is unreasonable. One, there is no evidence the requests are related to Carondo's appeal. Two, they impose a substantial burden on DPW and Parsons Transportation Group. Parsons Transportation Group allocated two people working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 63 days.
But Mr. Keeler, we're not here about her FOIA request for all the transportation procurements or solicitations back to 2010. We're just here on the issues that Carondo raises on its appeal. That's it.
Okay.
Do you have any other arguments pertinent to?
No.
About, okay. Very well. I will take the motion to disqualify Civilian King under advisement. And we'll issue a decision in writing. All right, the last item of, now that basically we've covered all the motions.
Yes.
Okay, and the last item is Carondo has filed a request for a hearing. Ms. Tang, would you still like that hearing?
Yes.
Very well.
Thank you.
And we will then schedule a hearing. And the earliest that we could schedule a hearing is probably all right. So the earliest, so the earliest essentially that we could have the hearing would be approximately December the 9th.
That's fine with me.
And then
I just wondered, will we get the decisions?
I will do my best to expedite the decisions.
So we'll know what to prepare for. It could narrow the issues or broaden the issues.
Yeah, and I hope to issue a decision probably, you know, of course today is Tuesday, hopefully by Friday or Monday in this matter. So does anybody have any problems with holding the formal hearing on the 9th of December?
No, not at all. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Keeler?
No.
All right. And I'm anticipating, how many witnesses are you anticipating, Ms. Tang?
I will be calling five or six. Two will be, I just want to confirm Mr. Felix Beneventi will be available because he's actually taken over some of the duties of the director on this case, so would he be available?
Yeah, and just for informational purposes, Felix Benavente is the deputy director. He has taken over for the successor contractor because the director has a conflict with his family member.
Okay.
That's right, and then I'm sorry, I have
but I'll let you
two
work
experts,
out. Okay, I'm just asking how many you can work out, whether
seven.
Or not they're available. If they're not available, they say they're not, either party can make a request for subpoenas. So you're saying two experts and...
Two experts and two DPW witnesses.
So four?
And then Two DPW witnesses, then Mr. Younger, Mr. Beneventi, and then the Stanley individual.
You don't have to disclose your witness list at this time. I'm just asking a ballpark figure.
Six, seven.
Okay, so Mr. Keeler, how many witnesses do you plan on calling?
I would say approximately the same amount.
Okay, so about seven witnesses. So we're also going to...
Are they same?
How many days are we estimating?
So what we'll do is we'll also...
We have to finish it, too. She's leaving.
We will also schedule a hearing, or the second day of the hearing, for the 10th of this
month.
No one has a problem with those 2 days?
No.
No, all right.
And we'll finish in two.
We hope.
We have full days.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll try to block out full days.
Yes.
And I will issue a scheduling order giving a timeline to file your witness list, your exhibit list, your and likewise the hearing briefs, so on and so forth, shortly after this hearing. Now, are there any other matters I need to take up in this case at this time?
No, thank you.
No.
Very well. Now I'll issue I'll issue written decisions on the motions, and likewise issue a scheduling order for the formal hearing, which shall be heard on the 9th and 10th of December. It is now 11:05 a.m., and this pre-hearing conference and motion hearing.